Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English day.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And then what
we did? Now we've done the whole thing. We can stop.
That's the big thing. Yeah. Right. Okay. And if you'd like today, presuming that today is Saturday, the 15th of October, the day that taxes are ultimately, well, actually, it's not till Monday, but, you know, it's sort of the 15th, when taxes are ultimately due to the federal government. And you could call 254-773-1400 and harass us or interrupt our duologues.
That's called a dialogue.
Well, no, it's actually a duologue because we're actually both of us talking to the public and ignoring each other.
Right. Well, wait, I'm supposed to be ignoring you right now. I can't agree with you.
Okay, that's okay. It's all right. You'll get through this.
Purple buffalo. It's just a completely different subject so that I can be ignoring you. There we go.
Purple buffalo.
That could be a Defense Department set of paired
Buffalo Springfield.
Could be.
And we have a disclosure.
Yes.
And a disclaimer. The Personal Wealth Coach is not coincidentally the name of this radio presentation, and it is also the name of a SEC registered investment advisor in Salado, Texas. And that's not coincidental because it has only two principals, and both of them are sitting here in this radio presentation.
Right.
Which is spelled different from the other kind of principal, but you can't hear it when I say it, but that's beside the point. We actually have lots of principals, but we only have two principals.
We stand by our principals.
And we do.
Especially
actually,
if you're a principal.
If we're standing next to each other, right?
I stand
next to my other principal.
I'm beside myself standing next to my principals.
Got it. And
right.
Again, telephone number 254-947-1400. And we're here to talk to you about, or talk with you about, things that are economic. That have to do with portfolios, investments, the markets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Economy. Even if it's economy of scale,
the economy of scale is the manufacturers of scales in the United States, except for the fact that almost none of them are now manufactured in the United States, but they are marketed and sold and distributed in the United States.
As long as they are fair scales, then even blindfolded people use them. Blindfolded people using scales, it's very important for our justice system. We got to make sure they're fair.
The problem is you have to be able to see the results of the scale in order to figure out what happened.
No, that's not in the statute.
It's not?
No.
Statue or statute?
Both, I guess. The statute.
Well, we're back and in good form here. Good form,
I think,
Jake.
That is a, depends on the perspective whether or not this form is good.
Well, it's better than that in good form, Jack. Okay, anyway, so what happened during the week?
Well, we began the week on Sunday, ended the week on...
Well,
no,
now...
It's not quite done yet.
No, because Sunday's part of the weekend. It has to be part of the week. So a lot of people think the week begins on Monday.
Every end is a new beginning.
Beginning. Yeah.
It's a beginning.
Yeah, anyway. The stock market, as represented by the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index, dropped almost 1% during the week in a crash of unmitigated proportions.
It dropped almost 1% in a crash. Well, I think it was mitigated in proportions.
Well, it sounded really good.
You should write headlines. You will sell a lot of papers.
Okay, so that's noise in essence. The good news is if you look back a year, it's up about 4.67%. If you look back 5 years on an annualized basis, it's up like 11-point-something%. But here's what's interesting. If you go back 10 years, it's also up 4.91% on average every year for the last 10 years, which for us old folks who remember the 1990s, back before the last century in the other millennium.
That's before the aughts.
Right. When we got used to the fact that over long periods of time, the stock market generally turned in about a 12% a year, and sometimes a lot better. Sometimes it got up close to 20. And so there's two ways of looking at the fact that over the last 10 years, which is fairly representative of what's been going on, the stock market, the Standard & Poor's 500 stock exchange, has actually risen less than 5% a year. We've also had really, really, really tiny amounts of inflation.
There, as far as the stock market returns, we have an echo. that is within many of our listeners' lifespans. Yes, in the 70s, the returns of the stock market were very similar to what we've seen over the last 10 years.
I think the word is abysmal.
Well, I wouldn't quite say abysmal. Abysmal means falling to the abyss. So
yeah, but
we
that's
actually
what's used
have...
in the news media to say that it ain't perfect, therefore it's abysmal.
Right, and this we're both word nerds, and when we point out to people that slow growth is still growth, it means that we're not slowing down. The media seems to think that we're slowing down. And wait a minute, slower growth is still acceleration. We're going faster than we were. Don't hear me saying that we're in great shape, but we're not in bad shape either.
We're just in, it's one of those wonderful situations, like remember the joke about the guide who was taking the photographer to photograph bears in Alaska, and they came across a grizzly bear and realized they were between the grizzly bear and her cubs, and the guide immediately dropped to the ground and changed into his running shoes, and the photographer said to the guide, "Wait a minute, you can't outrun that bear." And he says, "I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you."
Right.
That's the way the United States is in the world. It's certainly not a high-growth environment, and it has got a lot of stagnation and unpleasantness in that it's not growing very fast. But when you compare it to everybody else who are not growing at all or shrinking, we're actually, and it's really hard to accept this, of all the major developed nations in the world, or nation groups, if you've got the EU as a nation group, we have two very fascinating aspects. A, we're the fastest growing, and B, we have the lowest taxes. Total taxation. I just read that this morning, by the way. They got a validation, both it was in the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times, that if you look at the total taxation of Americans, it's like 26%.
That's federal taxes.
No, that's everything.
That's not everything.
Well, that's what he said in the
article. They've missed a lot of things, because I've studied this pretty regularly. I mean, even if you just take Social Security and FICA, anybody that's earning that, they're at the 15 already. If they don't count the part that the employer is paying, it's only 7.
Now, you're talking about wages, and you're right on wages.
Okay.
But we're talking about total GDP. 26% of it goes to taxes, which includes, like, earnings, long-term capital gains, dividends, real estate sales where there are no actual taxes. For instance, if you sell a house that's been your primary resident up to $500,000, you pay no taxes on it at all.
Right, if you've lived in it two of the last 5 years.
So the point is that there's a lot of GDP or income or profit or whatever you want to call it that shows up that either isn't taxed or is taxed at a very, very, very low rate. So when you put it all together, 26% of the gross domestic product of the United States goes to state, local, and federal taxes.
There is another factor that should be included there that is rarely done, and that's not the actual taxes, but the preparation of taxes. And if you look at the expenses going up over the past decade and a half, the cost of preparing your taxes at a time when computers are coming out and when we should be getting easier and easier, the tax code has gotten complex faster than Moore's Law, or at least faster than the programmer's ability to keep up with it, so that we're spending more on the preparation of our taxes, and that's at least another percentage or two. We could tack those on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, but again, this is in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
10/15/2016. Not to get political, but the headline is, Donald Trump says the U.S. is a high-tax country. He's wrong. And it says, in 2014, according to the latest data available, because 2015 taxes haven't been collected yet, today is the deadline to get it into the IRS. Actually, Monday is. The U.S. collected 26% of gross domestic product in taxes under the 34.4% average for major industrialized nations. Yes, that includes federal, state, and local taxes. So, yeah, we don't like our taxes, and we say they're too high, and they are, I think, in some areas. For instance, corporate taxes are higher than anybody else's corporate taxes in the developed world, and as a result, the money goes to the rest of the world and stays there, because it's kind of like Texas doesn't have an income tax. And as a result, jobs move to Texas, and corporations move to Texas, because we neither have a corporate nor individual income tax in Texas. So taxes are lower in Texas. That That's hard to say. Taxes are lower in Texas.
Yes.
So there is a tendency for economic activity to move to Texas. Corporate taxes are higher in the United States than they are in Europe. Therefore, there is an corporate activity tends to move to Europe, which we're, by the way, preparing taxes is harder in Europe than it is here.
It is. It's just they pay less, so it's worth it to stay there.
No, they – oh, yeah, the corporations do, but across the board. Anyway, it's what I'm trying to say is something positive about the United States, and
right.
That is that as bad as we may think it is when you compare it with what we think perfection might look like, we're just better off than anybody else. And it's kind of like democracy. Right now, a person could argue that democracy really is messy and not a particularly pleasant form of government. And as Winston Churchill said, you're right.
Yeah.
It's just better than any of the others.
Right. That doesn't mean we can't improve the
system. No.
We just have to do it with a lot of thought. I mean, a lot of thought went into the system that we have. It doesn't mean that we haven't broken it a few times in the meantime.
And I think, by the way, another article. Donald Trump could prove to be a real boost to the Republican Party.
It could be, because it was really lacking in leadership till now, and this kind of shakeup is causing some leaders mm-hmm. to come to the fore. They're not being very popular right now, but...
It compares the Dukakis debacle and the Democrats, who, by the way, have since then pretty much dominated the White House, because they restructured their party and rethought their affiliations and rethought who they were going to allow to run the show and rethought their philosophies and moved them a little bit to the center. Admittedly, there is a left-wing Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders group in there, and they threatened to take over, but they didn't succeed in doing it. And a real opportunity for the Republicans to take a long, hard look at what it means to be a Republican and quite possibly develop a philosophy that will appeal to a different segment of the population, or at least modify it. So as in when with many another thing, anytime that there's what appears to be a disaster looming, there's the opportunity to take a look at, it's kind of like New Orleans. We didn't learn a lot from New Orleans, but we're getting there, you know?
Right.
And New York learned a lot while we were there this last time. One of the things that came out is they are waterproofing all the electric conduits in the subways, where the electricity runs through for the whole city, runs underground. And they're going through and looking at their where they just had wires and junction boxes before. They're now saying, oops, this could go underwater, so we're going to put it inside of pipes and boxes that are water sealed, which is a pretty smart thing to do. Anyway, what else would we want?
Got a lot of good stuff. As a non-political issue, the second big rating agency has downgraded their bonds to junk status. Moody's just did that. That was yesterday. And the lira there dropped because of it. What is it? S&P and Moody's both downgraded the United States, too. But
not much.
Not much. It was still some pretty top-level
Did Moody's actually downgrade us? I think it was just S&P.
S&P did, and then Moody's did.
Okay.
And Moody's has put us back up. S&P still has us where they downgraded.
Okay.
I'm kind of surprised that they haven't downgraded again with the election cycle going on, just because of the...
They're probably going to wait till after the election.
Right. Because of the election cycle, we're going to downgrade even though it's over. Anyway, the lira has had a slump, and the reason why these rating agencies have downgraded the Turkey, and why is this important, is because I'm bringing this up because they're one of our strongest allies in the Middle East. They're part of NATO. If they're attacked, we are required to respond, and if we're attacked, they're required to respond. And they did in Afghanistan when 9/11 happened. They were right there with us. So a lot of people have had some bad talk about NATO lately. I think they're getting NATO confused with the UN. I really don't understand why.
Or the EU.
Or the EU, maybe.
Yes. Are the EU in?
Right. What happened there is there was an attempted coup. The rebels in the military tried to unelect a democratically elected person. Now, he's not a person that I have a great deal of confidence in. I don't really like him that much. I don't like his policies. He's been doing a lot of goofy-headed things. But he was democratic, and the military tried to take him out. Now, it didn't work. And... the result of the coup is why the downgrade took place, though. Not because somebody did a coup and it failed, but
his,
because...
His probable overreaction to
his,
it.
His have absolutely nothing to do with the coup. He's stripped out many of the independent news services. And
he's just basically arresting anyone who's not in his camp.
Right.
And putting him in jail.
This is right, exactly. And this is important because we're at a point right now in our political season where it's really easy to see anybody that disagrees with you as being evil somehow. Our founding fathers really thought about that. They thought about it enough that they made an amendment to the Constitution that said that the press was protected because we have checks and balances in our system. We have the legislation that says this is what we're spending, and we've got the executive branch that says, okay, here's how you say we're spending this, and I'm going to delegate how that actually happens. Then we have the court system that says one or the other of them, you're completely wrong, you're not following the document. That's really good checks and balances, but what if all three branches get corrupt? And then we have to fall back on the media. It's a fourth branch.
State.
The fourth estate.
Yes.
And the concept that the fourth estate is corrupt is a no-brainer. Yeah, it's corrupt. It's not really corrupt if you understand what they're doing. They're trying to make money. But their role in their ethics of investigating both major parties and plus, if they ever get popular enough, the independent parties to say, what are you doing? What you just said was wrong. What Turkey just did is very similar to what many dictatorial countries do, is they go out and they strip out anybody that disagrees with them, and they use that as the reason to do it. I think that's a major that needs to be brought to the fore now, because it makes investing difficult when you bring in that kind of risk where you don't know if the executive branch is going to pull out some more stops that aren't necessarily legal, but he's in a state of emergency right now, so he's allowed to do some things that aren't necessarily legal.
And that's going on in the United States. I know that's it isn't a matter of legalities in this case. It's a matter of I read several articles that quoted studies and went back and looked at the studies. There's two primary reasons for the slow growth in the United States right now. We have maybe 2% optimistically GDP growth coming along this year. Third quarter is going to look good with a round of 3% probably growth rate. But still, as far as the whole year is concerned, it's going to come out 1.8, maybe 2%. And there's a reason for that. And you can see it all around you. If you're a Republican, and most of our listeners are, you look at the Republican Party, it's divided and uncertain right now.
Right.
If you look at the European Union, it's divided and uncertain right now. We're both looking at the same article.
Policy uncertainty, drag on growth. It's higher than in the uncertainty is higher than in the depths of the recession.
And there's a lot of uncertainty in the United States among business people. And unfortunately, it's a choice between worse and bad. Very frankly, the surveys have repeatedly shown that if Donald Trump is elected, they're absolutely scared about what Donald Trump will do if he's elected at this point.
Right.
It's an unformed fear. And then the second one is if Hillary Clinton is elected, they're afraid that they will get a regulatory clampdown because she appears to be anti-business. Now,
right. You've got two fears, and you're just like, what am I less afraid of?
This is, for whatever it's worth, this is one of those things that came out in WikiLeaks the last couple of weeks that no one's paying attention to. It's very, very clear from her staff's comments going back several years. Mm-hmm. She's actually very pro-business.
Yeah,
she's pro Wall Street, pro business.
Then she goes up and has a different face for the fans.
Yeah, she has to pull the left wing in, so she has to sound like she's anti-business.
So yeah, and that's what people are holding against her. She's two-faced. She said these things that
you mean she's a politician?
Exactly. You know, we had fill in the blank pleasure or pain of being at one of the conferences that was leaked that she spoke at. And I've mentioned this on the air before. We also had the pleasure or pain, depending on what your perspective is. I think it's been pleasurable from one end to the other. Do you remember Hillary Clinton speaking?
No, I remember she was supposed to speak, and she went to a funeral, and somebody else showed up. Bill Clinton spoke at the conference.
Oh, I've seen Hillary Clinton speak.
Okay.
Okay. So that was one of the events she did not show up for, but this one, I think it was the following year. So the concept that when somebody's sitting in a chair in front of a bunch of investment-related people and they're asked questions, they're no longer in the political world, and they're asked questions, they're supposed to answer completely truthfully. And the example that I give the most to explain why these things shouldn't be released if they're ever going back into politics is George W. Bush. His public face about his invasion of Iraq and a lot of other things has been, no, I did nothing wrong. His nuanced approach to the answer in a place where it was off the record was very different. It was, had I known then what I know now, I wouldn't have done it the same way, which is a completely different response. And it's very easy to grab that and say George W. Bush believes he was wrong. That's the sort of thing that, you know, if you're recording a telephone conversation and you play it back for somebody on the air somewhere and they didn't know they were being recorded, it's why the laws are out there that says you have to tell people when you're recording them. Because what they say in private may not be what they say in public. And if you doubt that, think about the kind of conversation you have at the table, at your dinner table, about what you believe in politics and then what you would be willing to say if you were in front of a microphone.
Let me stretch that a little further. When you're sitting at the coffee shop with your guy buds.
Yeah, exactly.
And you talk about politics, it's going to be different from what you say at the dinner table with your wife and children there, or if you have children at home.
No, not to stretch
it. And it's going to be even further different from what you would say if we interviewed you on a radio program.
Right. And not to stretch it so far as to the locker room conversation.
Well, let's not go there.
Because there are a lot of people that don't do that kind of locker room
conversation. I have been in many locker rooms and never heard that set of conversations. So obviously the locker rooms that
we've been in either the right locker rooms or
the
in
wrong
some people's
ones, yeah.
mind, maybe the wrong ones.
I don't know.
I believe we've been in the right ones.
I've talked to several people about, did you ever hear that kind of conversation going on in a locker room? And maybe we're just circulating with the wrong kind of people.
Or the right. I don't know.
You know, obviously the rich and powerful, at least one of them, lives in a locker room or has, wait a minute, what the heck is Donald Trump doing in a locker room? He would have a private changing room. He's a billionaire.
On his airplane.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I don't know.
How would he know what went on?
He didn't have a private changing room. He had a private bus in this particular instance.
Oh.
And we're getting tongue-in-cheek here, but we just did talk about Hillary Clinton having a two-face. So
We're
letting you know that both sides are dangerous, and making sure that our checks and balances are working is vital here.
Be sure and balance your checkbook.
Yes, make sure and balance your checkbook. And what's funny is that this is bringing it to light. This political season brings it to light. But it's just as important when it's not hitting big like this. We need to know the dangers involved in whoever's in power. You can't just give your conscience away to someone else. You've got to remember that the responsibility lies with the voter. It doesn't matter if it's Congress or their local village alderman's election or your council election, you have the responsibility for the person you voted for. There's an old tradition: when you save someone's life, you're responsible for every act they do thereafter. If you elected somebody, you're responsible for what they do.
This is one of the great ironies that somebody, I haven't read a study on it, but I'd love to see somebody do one, is Congress has a 17% approval rating.
Right.
Which makes President Obama looks like, you know, an angel.
Well, he's
with a 51% approval.
Which
yeah.
is, for a lame duck at the end of his presidency, yeah. that's pretty,
this
pretty
is,
good.
But this is the thing. A majority of voters elected a Congress that only 17% approve of.
Right. There's a little spit there.
There's something wrong with this picture.
It's the old, I hate Congress, but I love my rep.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where talking about two-faced.
We're two-faced, too. We all are.
Well, no, it's two of us, so we are two-faced.
Yeah, you and I have
between the two of us, we have two faces.
And between the two of us, we have four heads. Two of them.
And four arms.
Yes. We each have four arms.
Speaking of that, telephone number's in here if you'd like to interrupt our soliloquy that's the duiloquy. It's
773-1400.
If I could change the subject.
Sure.
There's a significant, again, Wall Street Journal was reporting on a study. I like studies. By the Sentier Research firm, economics research firm, founded by former Census Bureau officials. So they're former bureaucrats.
Right. Has-been ex-bureaucrats.
Yeah. Anyway, what they revealed was a fascinating thing. Between 1996 and 2014, high school graduates' earnings per person declined 8.9%, while college graduates' per person earning rose 22.5%. Now, let's back down. Now, this is after adjusting for inflation. Between 1978 and 1996, white male high school graduates saw earnings drop by 10.7%, while for college graduates, they were up 30%. There's a huge trend here, and it goes all the way back to 1978. It goes back to before Ronald Reagan. It accelerated under Ronald Reagan, if you want to blame presidents for this.
Which is absurd, because presidents really don't have anything to do with this.
Yeah, but
we don't blame them.
Yeah, well, we can't say, okay, that was the Reagan Congress. No,
it wasn't. It's the same reason that Bill Clinton gets to take credit for having a surplus.
Right.
Like, he didn't set the budget. He didn't do anything that caused the surplus, but there it was. It was during his time.
Right. And, you know.
Under a Republican Congress.
And there is something to be said for the leadership ability of the president, if he has,
sure.
if he or she has one. Hey, anyway, the point is, I was saying this to my wife this morning when she was concerned about the anger that a segment of our population has. I mean, serious anger and serious perception, white male high school level education and below. In the United States, has this perception that they are oppressed, they are suppressed, they are unfairly treated, and frankly, they're right. And I said, we've been through this before, and here's the irony. I asked her when we were in college, which was back in 1846 or something like that.
Actually,
it was in the 1960s and 70s.
Were the hills dusty yet?
They weren't, no.
They were not,
no.
It was before
no,
the
no,
hills
no, no,
were
no. It was before, the Hillary was dusty.
And you had hair, didn't you?
I did.
Y'all, that's amazing. That must have been a long time ago.
It really was. And you weren't even born.
Wow.
We hadn't even thought of you yet. Anyway, the point is that when old Baldy here was in college, and in the years following when I was in the Army, at Fort Hood, this is the federal, this is not the National Guard. I was in tanks, in armor, and I was a platoon leader. And we took very significant portions of time parking our tanks, even during exercises, putting on helmet shields, plastic shields that dropped down in front of our faces, drawing M16s, which many of us weren't even authorized to have because we were tankers. We used submachine guns and pistols, putting bayonets on them and then covering the bayonets with covers. The bayonets potentially were to be used in a crisis. And then getting shoulder to shoulder and marching in lockstep 1 foot forward each time. In other words, we extend left, right would come up with it, left, right would come up with it, stomping as we went, shoulder to shoulder.
Crowd control.
You might call that, that was with bayonets fixed. Do you think that, that's...
That's really controlling the crowd.
And we had, you know, we were told we'd been issued live ammunition at that point. And when I went to a course in the Army... an armor course, there was a captain there who I got to know very well from the California National Guard, and he said something that I had not been in the papers, to the best of my knowledge. During the L.A. riots, where they burned down about 20% of L.A., they literally burned.
Right.
He and his tank company were deployed into L.A. in the streets. Tanks rumbling down the streets in Los Angeles.
I think that may be a little overkill, except for the terror factor. No, hearing the ching, 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 ching,
well,
ching,
now
ching,
his, ching. I said, why did they have tanks? And he said they were concerned about snipers and for the psychological effect. And I said, how'd that make you feel? He said, we were terrified. We had no ammunition in the tanks. And he said, I just thank God the rioters never heard of Molotov cocktails.
But that's what happened in Moscow when the Soviet Union fell, is that the tanks all rolled out and people just dropped Molotov cocktails on them.
But the point is that we have conveniently forgotten that. It's not a big thing in the history books, and those of us who are older you know, she said the Vietnam protests were the big thing. No, the big thing was the fact that there was a segment of our society that felt oppressed, that felt put down, that felt there was no hope for them to rise back up again, and there were no programs to support them.
And there's more than one segment feeling that way now.
Right.
One is they're just saying demographically, people, white men above a certain age they're feeling rightly that they're being discriminated against because they're being treated as if they were the cause of injustices in the past when they just happen to have the same characteristics of those people. They're white and they're men.
But here's the point I wanted to make in this, and I think you're correct. The point I want to make is it isn't free trade agreements.
Right.
It isn't jobs being exported. It's technology. It's a technological revolution, and I've written about this before. I don't think I've talked about it on the radio. The people that you look at who are supporting, who are really upset about the economy and tend to support Donald Trump because he is saying what they're thinking, are people whose jobs are likely to disappear in the next 10 years because of technology. We're just talking about
right.
it in here. There are, what did he say, 4 or 5 radio stations in this building.
I wasn't paying attention. I had my headset on.
There are 2 console operators in the building. Each of these radio stations used to have its own separate building and an entire staff of people.
Right, a whole team, a whole newsroom full of people getting news
right.
ready.
So we have this one little building with, I think, 5 radio stations in it, and 2 of the consoles are being operated by live people. And so what you've got, no, I guess it's 4 radio stations and 2 of them are being, so 50% of the jobs as console operators in a radio station have disappeared.
And they weren't replaced by the highest technology in the world either. The computers that are running this stuff in here are still Windows like, what is this, Vista?
Yeah, but I think this is not, yeah, this is partially run automatically.
XP.
Yeah, so truck drivers. I mean, there's truck drivers all over the country who, and that's a significant portion of our population, and loaders and unloaders of trucks and so on. That's a big, McLean's got a big warehouse, and we know people who work there who
right.
Move stuff around in the warehouse.
The last radio operator that was in here before Paul, who's mm-hmm. great, by the way, Marshall was working at
right.
McLean's.
And this is the point. Amazon, for example, doesn't have workers in their warehouses.
They do right now. For holiday seasons, they've just hired several thousand people. But most of the time, it's robots. And the only reason why they're hiring this year, I don't expect them to do it next year. They're going to mm-hmm. have machines to do it all because machines are cheaper.
What is missing? If you want to get ahead, if you know kids who are going to go to school or whatever are not going to go to school, the people who have college educations have learned some degree of critical thinking and some degree of literacy.
There's one other piece here. Let me throw that in here before we go any further, and that is the inequality that's been measured in pay scale and for many years has been pointed at demographics, race or color or gender. There's a really big new study that's just come out that's looking, and it's by Harvard University's Richard Freeman. And the National Institute of Science. There's a bunch of good stuff in here that goes into a lot of detail that says that inequality in pay, if you take identical gender, identical skin color, identical educational background, and have them spread across first geographically different places, you see a big inequality. And then even in the same location, in same industry, just different companies, there's massive inequality. And it's kind of one of those things where you go, duh, some companies are more successful than others and can afford to pay their people better. Part of that is management. Part of it is a lot of things. But when it comes out that, you know, when people talk about inequality of pay and they're looking at women's pay, yes, overall women's pay is less than men. It's getting better, but it's still less. Yes, black people tend to be paid less than white people. It's getting better. But then white people get paid differently than white people too.
Yes, and this is that's the point. I was talking to chatting with a guy online last night in Maine, which tells you something. I'm not sure what. Actually, the guy is an Indian, a Penobscot Indian. Anyway, he was saying that he didn't like religion, that he trusted science because science was based on fact. And I said, that's a joke. And he didn't believe me initially. And I said, science is just another religion. And because
it's
because there's so much bad science. For example, if you go looking for racial discrimination in wages, you'll find it.
But if you go looking for lack of racial discrimination,
right,
you'll find that too.
Yeah, and yet if you did the same study and you just looked at different jobs in the same company or in different companies, you would find that obviously there's discrimination against people in Central Texas because they make less money than people in Austin do.
Or people in Manhattan do.
People in Manhattan make a lot more money than the people in Central Texas.
Exactly the same education.
Right.
Exactly the same experience.
So
exactly the same industry. So someone's being discriminated against. No.
Yes. So people in Central. No, wait a minute. Now, let me tell you. Everybody here knows we're being discriminated against.
We all know that.
But in fact, if you turn around and look at something that I think is fascinating, here in Central Texas, when we talk about federal dollars, we have this huge positive cash flow. We get so much more federal dollars back into the economy here than we pay out that we are the most, I think this Bell County and the surrounding counties have the highest, except a couple of places in Connecticut, the highest positive federal cash flow. And, of course, the reason is Fort Hood's here.
We've got to play some commercials.
We
got to keep these lights on and the air conditioning running.
Oh, yes.
So,
yes,
we
must keep the air conditioner running.
We'll be back in just a minute with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to call us and join to the conversation, phone number in here is 254-773-1400. We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and Jake McClure. You say that part. That way we'll say it better.
And we're back with the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
There, see, that's the way we practice it for almost 20 years.
You really need to get a radio voice, you know?
I went to
try
the store
it. Try
and
it.
They didn't have one.
You could try it. I mean, you can just talk like this.
I just feel like I need to say Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
There you go. You did it. You can do it. Only it's Saturday.
But I'm talking three Sundays away from now.
Oh, okay.
That's why I say it three times.
Oh, so that's okay. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and if you'd like to call in and either tell us that we are complete idiots, which we won't disagree with, or comment on something we've said or something else that has something to do with economics or investing, you can give us a call at 773-1400. Local area code, of course, is 254-773-1400. Or you can't, or you cannot, as the case may be. Hey, I want to follow up on this thing about jobs.
Go ahead.
Sounds Christine great. Lagarde was quoted in, I think, Financial Times or something, about it was an interview with her, where she said that a lot of jobs are disappearing because of technology, because they're being replaced, in essence, with robots. And her solution, I thought, was absolutely fascinating. It shows part of the big divide that's going on. Her solution was that people that are in jobs, as an example, truck drivers, should be educating themselves in areas where there is a high demand for new workers. And I got to thinking, she didn't say truck drivers, but I got to thinking about that. Maybe that's true in France. Maybe because you can only work 30-some hours a week and you're mandated to have the rest of the time off. In the United States, the people I know whose jobs are threatened are working absurdly long hours, and in many cases they're working second jobs. And at the same time, they're barely making ends meet, which means they don't have the money to afford the education. They don't have the time to get the education, and they're too tired even if they do when they get off work to even deal with that. And here's, I think, one of the problems that Donald Trump has identified effectively, and we really need to address. And I may have said this before, but I'm going to say it again. If you're a disabled veteran, if you're a minority, if you fall into any of the major classes of oh, there you are. You need to be assisted by the federal government. In many cases, there are programs where you get paid to go to school and get an education.
Right.
If you are a middle-aged or more than middle-aged white male, and your job is being gobbled up by technology, and again, I refer to truck drivers. If you're in a truck and you're listening to this, you should be, and you've got more than 10 years left of truck driving in you, you should be scared. Where is a federal program to retrain people in from General Motors whose construction job, not construction, but whose job on an assembly line has disappeared and will never come back?
There's a more fundamental issue in there.
Hmm.
The fact that there are so many different support programs, entitlements, that are out there, that finally the last bastion of people that aren't getting them are saying, what about me? That's a danger, because we are already in deficit. And this year the deficit is bigger than it was last year. It's the first time in 5 years that we have more spending and more debt from the year before. Mm-hmm. So, and it's going up at a rate much faster than our GDP, and has been for several years. If we take the best quarter of any of those years, one quarter we grew faster than the deficit, and those deficits were down year by year. The first 2 years were great. The 3 years after that, we're back to this, well, how do we pay for people so that they're not so angry? How do we give them money from the federal government so they're not so angry? We need to relook at this, because it's creating such a complexity in our world. Just try signing up for Social Security. Just try signing up for Obamacare. It takes days to get it right. And the few people that I've spoken to that said, oh, it was painless, I just clicked some things and it was done, I'm going, what happened to you? Because I hear people going through this and it takes them many days. How long did it take you to sign up for Social Security?
I worked on it for about a month.
Yeah. Because the website kept saying, nope, you're not you, and you actually had to go to the Social Security Administration office.
It asked me for the license tag, and we have, at that point, I had three license tags, and I wanted to know which of these was my license tag number, and I had a limited amount of time, and I realized that none of the, because I checked, and then said, okay, I backed out and said, I get all my license tag numbers and write them down and be ready to do this thing. Went in there, and it didn't ask me that the next time. It wanted to know the company that held my mortgage and what my monthly pay. No, this was the question. What is your monthly mortgage payment, not counting taxes and insurance? I don't have a clue. I know what the monthly mortgage payment is, but that counts taxes and insurance.
So what I'm saying here is that the entitlement programs grow bureaucracies, which are another charge against our taxes. It's part of the debt here, is that we're now having an election that's talking about the, hey, I am being pushed out by technology and nobody's spending money to train me. Because people are training those people over there and those people over there. The entitlements have gotten so big that even we, when we're having this conversation, say, well, what about this last group of people?
But let me explain this entitlement, if you want to call it that. Everything I know, as well as every study I read, says if you say, okay, here's a group of people who are becoming economically non-productive in society because of changing standards, changing technology, and you train them in areas where they can be employed, that's kind of like building roads. You know, building roads, and that's one of the reasons the deficit's gone up, is we're building a lot of new roads and bridges. But that is an investment that actually produces more tax revenue in the future than it costs us to do it today. Now, that's different from saying, for example, I don't completely get the idea that currently the SNAP/food stamp program is available for single people who've lost their jobs.
Right.
There's something.
That was supposed to be for mothers and children who didn't have any other means of support.
And they had to have children, but now it's been extended by somebody.
by a lot of people.
And I mean, no, it's been rescinded by Congress. Now, I don't know how. Where did that get through Congress?
It got through Congress because Congress is human too, and they look around and they say, "How can I say no to these people? They're out of a job. They're really working hard to get a job. I'm going to help pay for their whatever, for their food." And what we need to do is go back and say, "How do we at the beginning in the public school system?" How do we teach people to innovate on their own? How do we teach people to break out of this, I'm in trouble, so someone come and help me? How do we teach them to help themselves?
Well, we have in the past.
Yes, we have. And we're not doing it right now.
No, wait a minute. The problem is that in the past, when technology jumped ahead, we had exactly the same problem, and people just fell out of the system. 1920s, technology jumped ahead. We got the recession, and we got the depression,
and we had
30%.
Right, then we changed our entire education system.
But not only did we change our education system, a lot of those people who were unemployed got put to work and put in at federal expense and put into the armed forces or put into industry making things for the armed forces, got training under federal programs, and we had a boom on the – and then the people who were in the military who got out had the VA education program. And so this tremendous – educational boom, and we got the post-war boom instead of a after World War One, we got a depression.
I recognize that and what you're saying is absolutely right. I totally believe what you're saying, that the VA, the education system for the military, the GI Bill that came along and said, hey, you get part of your or all of your college taken care of because you deserved it, and we applied that for a lot of people that fought. That was a temporary solution, though, because the next generation didn't get that, except in small part.
Right.
But we changed the lower education system in the 20s and 30s to be the best in the world, and we haven't altered it since.
One of the things – well, that's a point.
It's now falling way, way back.
Here's a point, and again, you may disagree with me on this, but I remember being in a little town, little very regular cultural backwater where there was a graduation in the ninth grade and a lot of kids didn't come back to school.
Right.
The last 3 years of high school is a 20th century thing. I mean, it have that as free public education. It used to cost. Well, guess what? Everything we see says four years of college means you have a reasonable chance of having a job for the rest of your life. And without the 4 years of college, you don't. The proposals to make that paid for by the government are not too out of whack, in my opinion, because I think it would be a good investment and would result in higher taxes and lower deficits.
And it used to be. I mean, I hear a lot of people say, I went to a state school when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and they paid, though I had to pay $100 a semester or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we're about out of time. We'll talk about education and so on more next hour. We got a lot of other things to talk about as well. Hopefully you have as much as I do. So
I do. I got lots
and
lots
too
of
much
stuff
to talk about. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting. It's at locally 254-947-1111 or toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
Or you can contact us by email, that new innovative thing, at either Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com, listen to podcasts, read our philosophy, check out our newsletter. And we really recommend that. There's a lot of in-depth stuff that we can only discuss in person because it has to be personalized. A lot of the general stuff can't be said on the air. So until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
AM Temple Belton Killeen Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.